It's The Takeaway. I'm Arun Vanigopal in for Tanzina Vega. Good to have you with us. Today, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo wraps up his first visit to sub-Saharan Africa during his term. He's visited Senegal, Ethiopia, and Angola, and has spoken to business leaders about expanding trade on the continent. Secretary Pompeo is promoting the White House plan for the region called Prosper Africa, which shifts U.S. involvement away from aid and towards investment. In Senegal, Pompeo announced a number of projects, including a 100-mile highway.
Foreign Minister and I discussed how we can tighten our trade ties even further, including infrastructure investment, embracing free market policies that attract capital, private capital, ensuring consistent enforcement of the law, and doubling down on any corruption efforts are the surest way to grow prosperity in Nigeria and all across the region.
The Secretary of State has also been discussing military aid and security concerns as countries in West Africa are combating the presence of ISIS, Boko Haram, and Al-Qaeda. Yet, the Trump administration said it may withdraw troops from that region.
You can see that our investments are transparent, they're clean.
The administration has sent mixed signals about its priorities and interests in the continent more than once. Pompeo's visit comes shortly after the Trump administration expanded its travel ban to include four African countries: Eritrea, Nigeria, Sudan, and Tanzania. And it's only the second visit by a Secretary of State during this administration. In March of 2018, Rex Tillerson had to cut his trip to Africa short and was fired the day after returning. To talk about the U.S. role in Africa and how the Trump administration is doing against its goals there, I'm joined by Yinka Adegoke, Africa editor for Quartz. Thanks for being with us, Yinka.
Hi, Arun.
Also on the line, we have Jude Moore, visiting fellow at the Center for Global Development, who previously served as Liberia's Minister of Public Works. Welcome to The Takeaway.
Thanks. I'm glad to be a part of the conversation.
Yinka, we've got this big trip right now that the Secretary is concluding right after the U.S. announces significant list of new countries on its travel ban. What is the message here from the U.S. to the countries in Africa?
Thanks, Arun. It's almost certainly a confused one. It's sending mixed signals to the countries that just are looking to the United States as a partner. If you are trying to work with countries, you can't at the same time be stopping their citizens from, you know, going through immigration processes or making it tougher for people to come into the country. At the very time when really America should be working closer with African countries, this is it's a great opportunity for the United States to really sort of take a lead in partnering with Africa right now. We are on the verge of the African Continental Free Trade Agreement, which is going to open up trade on the continent across the 54 countries. And, you know, the United States should be at the forefront, working to partner with countries and moving forward.
Jude, anything to add there?
Well, I would just start by saying, you know, it is a good thing that a high-ranking U.S. government official is on the continent, because in international affairs, the importance of a relationship is evidenced in the number of high-level exchanges. So having the American Secretary of State on the continent is an indication to American businesses, to the U.S., American citizens wanting to engage with the continent, that the U.S. government sees the continent as important, and so the Secretary of State is visiting. I think that's a good thing. But I have to agree with Yinka that it seems as if the American policy toward the continent is on the one hand given, and then the other hand taken away. And one of the things I will add quickly is that the administration's budget submitted to Congress, Africa sees the greatest decline in terms of programs and support. I mean, countries like Malawi that has just done this great job with its democracy sees almost a 44% decline. Liberia, 55% decline. Guinea, 100% decline. So it's hard to imagine that you claim that this is an important part of the world, but you're reducing in terms of your support and engagement with it at the same time.
Jude, what can you tell us about some of the specific proposals from the Trump administration?
So I guess we'll go back to the U.S. Two-way trade between the continent and the United States has been declining for a while. In 2009, China surpassed the United States as the continent's largest trade partner. And so Prosper Africa, one of the things it tries to do is to double two-way trade between the United States and the continent. And this is a good thing because the continent needs as many partners as it can and doesn't want to be in an unbalanced relationship with a single partner. And so the idea here is to get more American investment on the continent, get more American businesses doing business on the continent. And that's one of the most concrete things that they're trying to do. And one of the ways of doing that is to try to even the playing field for American companies on the continent. So American companies have complained that Chinese, Turkish, and even UK companies have the direct input of the government and support of the governments when they're on the continent, and American companies didn't. So Prosper Africa creates these things called deal teams. It's a whole of government approach that provides support to U.S. businesses wanting to do business on the continent. So those are some of the concrete things that Prosper Africa seeks to accomplish.
Yinka, let's look at the state of China's investment in Africa. Over the last 15 years, it closed in on $2 trillion, according to the American Enterprise Institute. And according to CNBC, China-Africa trade in just 2017 was more than three times as much as U.S.-Africa trade. Does China simply take Africa a lot more seriously than the U.S. does?
Absolutely. Here's the key thing the way to think about the China-Africa and relationship and compared to the United States. You know, the Chinese, the huge strategic advantage that the Chinese have over the United States, it's not necessarily, you know, you often hear about loans and they're building all these, bridges and all, what have you.
Huge projects.
Huge construction. And they're doing all this great work, or, you know, some of it's controversial. But the real advantage the Chinese have over the Americans is they're playing the long game. You know, they're not just there on a kind of, what's going to happen in the next 4-8 years, election cycle, whatever. They're thinking long term. They're literally looking at Africa and they're saying, we recognize this because this was us 30, 40 years ago. And we can make investments. Yes, we can make some money. Yes, but we'll be together with these countries over the long term. And what you seem to see with the United States is it's just what can happen now. What can we get out of this right now? And really, Africa is a long term. You know, you think about these countries, it's a long-term project. And it's not just a project. It's just the reality of the world. By the end of this century, 40% of all working people will be Africans. That's just the demographics of the way the world is changing. So this isn't somewhere, you know, if you're thinking America first should actually be about how can we partner with these countries more comprehensively for the long term and not just for, let's cut our budgets here, let's move troops there. It's really thinking about integration, which is really what the Chinese have done.
Jude, when I think about the kinds of images that, I grew up with in terms of the U.S. view of Africa, various parts of Africa, you think about the kind of comments that attributed to the president, certainly bordering on either patronizing or just certifiably racist. Are these attitudes really shaping official policy and, business when it comes to U.S.-Africa trade?
We saw that over the last year, Africa, the tech industry in Africa is taking off, and about $1.3 billion went to African tech companies. A lot of that money is coming from the U.S. So that attitude is still prevalent, but it's been punctured in a number of ways. And I just wanted to go back to what Yinka was saying, that there is something increasingly transactional about American policy. And it's this idea that, we have to do it now. We have to be able to do it now. And one of the things that also comes up is supposedly African markets are way too small, too fragmented, and too balkanized and difficult to scale for American businesses seeking to do that. I'll just give you an example. China's total two-way trade with the continent over the last year was $208 billion. China's two-way trade with the whole world is $4 trillion. So you can see Africa is a very small piece of China's total trade and engagement with the world. But the first trip that a Chinese foreign minister makes every year is to Africa. So to Juncker's point about playing a long game, being strategic, and what we're seeing again and again is an insistence on tactical gains for American policy that is unmoored from a long-term strategic outcome. And so but this wasn't always this way. The U.S. is capable of a long-term strategy, and the hope is that with Prosper Africa, we can begin to see that. But I also think, you know, I did an interview with Howard French, the former journalist and teacher and instructor now at Columbia University. And one of the things he said to change the perception of the U.S. in Africa, it has to be not just the U.S. government. The U.S. media has a role to play in terms of how the continent is increasingly perceived. He also commented on the fact that almost every American high-ranking official, whether it was President Obama or Secretary of State Clinton or Tillerson and now Pompeo, the minute they arrive on the continent, begin to talk about corruption. Corruption has to end. Corruption is sometimes it comes off as patronizing, right? And you don't get this from the UK. You don't get this from Turkey. You don't get this from the EU. You don't get this from China. And some of that has to change because you can't, on the one hand, be advocating an increase in two-way trade and at the same time, one, calling the place corrupt, two, reducing your security support. How do you make a place unsafe that you're encouraging American businesses to invest? So there's this two. It's like a struggle within the administration itself in terms of what its policy actually should be toward the continent. So in terms of perception, the government, yes, but I think in terms of U.S. media and how the continent is perceived has a significant role to play too.
Juncker, I mean, Judah was talking about the fragmentation of the continent as being an obstacle, but Nigeria has the biggest economy in Africa. And here we go. The U.S., that is, imposing a travel ban. How much is this going to affect our business prospects?
Well, the way it might affect is it actually ties into to something that Judy brought up there about the tech, the rise Lagos in particular, but also Nairobi and some other cities have become huge tech hubs. And you can see that same sort of relationship with Silicon Valley where tech entrepreneurs are going to Silicon Valley and coming back, learning skills, coming back to the continent and building businesses, you lose some of that. Because I've already started to hear from some entrepreneurs who are in Silicon Valley saying, well, I'm not going to be able to renew my visa. It doesn't look like I can stay. I'll go to London. I'll go to some other city because they need the, you know, sort of technical
somewhere
skill.
Where you're more welcome.
Exactly. So we're going to see some of that happen. And it's just... And to be clear, some of these things are less about the actual specific policy and more about the signaling. Right. So investors start to think, well, maybe we shouldn't be there. People, you know, ICE operators start to be more aggressive and people stop coming.
I've been speaking with Juncker Adegoke, Africa editor for Quartz, Jude Moore, visiting fellow at the Center for Global Development. Thanks to you both for being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.